Okay, so again, that is the recrystallization portion. So the other experiment we're talking about, again, the data is given to you, so you don't actually have to physically do this experiment. We do need to understand how it works and so forth. This is what we call the bromination of arenes. So if I were to ask you, give me some functional groups in organic chemistry, hopefully you'd start saying alcohol, carboxylic acid. I mean, you'd just start listing them. Most of you would probably not mention the hydrogen as a functional group, even though it's the very first functional group we learn about. Now, very first start of the book, when we're talking about nomenclature, alkanes, methane, ethane, propane, etc. Those are just hydrogens, folks. Now, there's a good reason why we typically don't think about the hydrogen as a functional group, because there ain't a whole lot you can do with it. It's not very reactive. But the only thing we usually think about with hydrogens is in acid-base chemistry. But in fact, there is a reaction that we can do with hydrogens called a free radical substitution with a halogen. Okay, so this is a free radical reaction. And remember, with free radicals, there are three steps in a free radical mechanism. The first step is always called initiation. This is the process that produces the initial radicals. So you break the bond between the halogen, and it produces the two halogen radicals. The next step in a free radical mechanism is the propagation step. And depending upon your reaction, there could be multiple steps in this whole process. There could be one. It just kind of depends on the reaction. In our particular case, there's a couple of steps. The first is the halogen radical pulling off the hydrogen, giving us the acid and generating the hydrocarbon free radical. And then the next step is the hydrocarbon radical reacting with another molecule of the halogen. And this step right here is the propagation step specifically, because it produces the substituted hydrocarbon and it regenerates the halogen radical. And so that allows the whole process to start all over again. So propagation steps, again, could be one step in the propagation process, could be two, could be three. It just depends upon what reaction you're dealing with. For us, it's two. There's the formation of the acid, then there's the formation of the substituted hydrocarbon. But termination steps are steps that stop the reaction. And in our particular case, there are three. The first one is the reverse of the initiation reaction. It's just two radicals reacting with each other to form the halogen all over again. Hopefully you can understand why this is a termination reaction, because no more halogen. The second is the hydrocarbon radical reacting with halogen radical. This does indeed produce the substituted product. But again, no free radical is regenerated. And so again, that's why it's a termination step. And then the last one is the radical of the two hydrocarbons reacting with each other. Okay? All right, so this is a reaction we can do, but is it useful? Now, what do I mean by that statement? When I say useful, for a reaction to be useful, it needs to fulfill two basic requirements. We have to be able to predict what the reaction products are going to be. If we mix these two things together under these conditions, we should always get this result. If we don't have any idea of what the results are going to be of a reaction, it's just like pour, close your eyes, and pray. Okay? So for a reaction to be useful, it has to be predictable. But just because it's predictable doesn't mean it's actually useful. If we can say, hey, this is going to happen, but it produces 30 different products, and it always produces 30 different products, and we only want one of those 30, that's not really going to be that helpful, because now we got to separate out one of 30 different final products. And so, yeah, it produces what we want, but it ain't really worth doing because we have way too much work to do. Okay? So let's try and figure out if it's actually a useful reaction. We're going to start off with a really simple example, propane reacting with chlorine. When you do this, you get two monosubstitution products. You get two chloropropane and one chloropropane. Now, if this reaction is random, in other words, all it takes for the reaction to occur is a chlorine radical bumping into one of the hydrogens. Because of that randomness, we can actually predict what the outcome should be. Okay? And so that's based upon statistics. So for propane, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hydrogens that can react to form one chloropropane. So if it's random, we expect 6 for every 2 chloropropanes. If this is random, if it's not random, if there is a control mechanism, then the results might be drastically different. And when you actually look at this reaction, we actually get 55% to 45%. And what that tells us is that this is a reaction that has a control mechanism. Because randomness tells us what the distribution should be. But we're not getting that. We're getting basically 1-to-1. Okay? Now, some of you might be thinking, well, we can predict it if it's random or not random, so the prediction aspect is absolutely covered. Well, yes and no. Yes, we can predict the distribution if it's random, but once you get beyond a certain number of possible products, that prediction method becomes very, very difficult because randomness gets very complicated very, very quickly. All right? And so, yeah, we can predict it with simple molecules, but once you start getting into really, really big molecules, it becomes much more difficult. Because, hey, there's 15 of these hydrogens, but only 3 of them are really accessible. So how do we determine what the randomness should produce under these results? Extremely hard. If there's a controlling mechanism, however, well, all we need to understand to predict it is the controlling mechanism. Once we understand the controlling mechanism, we can say, okay, I know how this reaction works. That gives me a real powerful tool to predict the results. And in the case of this reaction, that controlling mechanism is the stability of the free radical. It's just basically exactly the same as the stability of a carbocation. The more substitution, the more stable it is. So primaries are going to be less stable than secondaries, etc. Okay? All right. We know it's not random, and we understand the controlling mechanism. We haven't answered that second question yet about does it produce multiple things. Well, this is simple propane, and you only get 1-to-1. Butane is going to have the same basic problem. But once you get to pentane, now all of a sudden you got 3 products, etc. In other words, we're not going to be getting that primarily one product with a small number of others. We're just going to be getting a mixture of multiple products. So one half of the equation is answered. We know the mechanism. We can predict the outcome. But we don't know if it's still useful. So let's do this example again, only now we're going to use bromine. And the same two products are possible, one bromopropane and two bromopropane. But the distribution is much, much different. Anybody want to guess what it is? Two numbers that add up to 100, making it easy for you. 10 and 90, where do you want the 10? Here or here? One bromopropane, 10 or 90? All right, I'm just going to go 10. Help you out there. Anybody else want to guess? Two numbers that add up to 100. 40, 60. Where do you want the 40? 40, 60. The actual answer is 3. Oops, sorry. 97 to 3. So the 1090 was really close. Now we know the answer to the original question. Is this reaction useful? Yes, it is. Because even though statistically that bromine radical is going to run into those hydrogens the same number of times as the chlorine radical, the bromine radical almost preferentially prefers to react with the secondary hydrogen to produce 2-bromopropane. In other words, bromine preferentially prefers to react with the most reactive hydrogen. Another way of saying that is the most stable radical out of the molecule. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to take this concept and we're going to flip it around a little bit and make an experiment out of it. So we're going to react toluene, ethylbenzene, propylbenzene, and T-butylbenzene with bromine. And what we want to do is we want to say, of these four molecules, which is going to react the fastest? And then which is going to react the least fastest? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So in order to do this, we have to understand in these four molecules, what are the different types of hydrogens that exist? What are their relative reactivities towards each other? We then have to identify the most reactive hydrogen on each molecule. And then we have to identify, okay, of those most reactive hydrogens, which is the most reactive out of those four? So that's basically what we're asking you to do. Okay? So in these four molecules, there are three different types of hydrogens. So we have what are called aromatics. An aromatic is a carbon-hydrogen bond where the carbon is involved in or is in an aromatic ring. Okay, so that's a relatively simple one to understand. Then we have the brain just shut down. Hold on a second. I got to reboot. Then we have the aliphatic. There we go. Sorry about that. Aliphatics. This is an sp3 hybridized carbon that is bonded to a hydrogen. And that carbon is also only bonded to sp3 hybridized carbons. Okay, so in these molecules, we have an aliphatic here, here, and here. There is not an aliphatic hydrogen on toluene. And then the last one is what we call the benzylics. And a benzylic is a hydrogen that is bonded to an sp3 hybridized carbon. And that carbon is bonded to an aromatic ring. Okay? The relative reactivities of the three are aromatics are usually less or about the same reactivity as aliphatics. And they're both less reactive than the benzylics. Now, within The aliphatics, we only have one type. We only have primary aliphatics, because all three of these carbons are primary carbons, so the hydrogen is also considered a primary one. With the benzylics, however, this particular is a primary benzylic, but this one is a secondary benzylic, and this one is tertiary. In T-butylbenzene, there is no benzylic hydrogen because the carbon is bonded to four carbons. It's not bonded to any hydrogen. And their reactivities or primaries are less reactive than secondaries, than tertiaries. So this is all the information we need to know to understand how to identify the most reactive hydrogens. And the most reactive hydrogens are going to be the benzylics. Okay? So we have benzylics and toluene, ethylbenzene, and isopropylbenzene, but T-butylbenzene does not have any benzylics. It only has aliphatics and aromatics. So we already know number four is going to be T-butylbenzene, okay? And I'm spoiling it for you because the data is already there on the computer in the Canvas module. There's no point in, you know, hey, it's a surprise. No, it's already there, okay? So T-butylbenzene is going to be number four in reactivity. Well, primary is less reactive than secondary, is less reactive than tertiary. That means isopropylbenzene is the tertiary one. That's going to be the most reactive on down to toluene, okay? So we can predict the order of reactivity. And then we simply do the experiment. Now, again, you don't have to do this experiment because it's already been done for you. You just need to watch the video to get the time results. But the reaction's already been done. And the basic reaction, or the general reaction, is bromine with a carbon-hydrogen bond in front of a light bulb. Light is what's producing our bromine radicals. I'll discuss how that happens next week. And it produces our substituted bromide plus hydrochloric acid, or hydrobromic acid. Okay. So again, you have to have the pre-lab write-up for this when you walk into lab, but you're not physically going to be doing the experiment, all right? And it is exactly the same kind of pre-lab write-up. You have your safety analysis, the title, and your introduction. Why are we doing this experiment and why? Okay, so when we show up to lab, how many pre-lab write-ups do we have? Two. Now, if you did the recrystallization last week because you thought, oh, this is all one big pre-lab write-up, then you've already done the recrystallization. If you haven't, then of course you have to have it when you walk into lab this week. You also need the one for bromination of arenes. When you show up to lab, we are doing the extraction post-lab quiz first. Same procedure. Hopefully we're going to be a little bit faster in passing out the calculators and the pens. It was the very first time, so it's a learning curve for us too. Take the quiz, then you do your recrystallization experiment. All right, so last week I forgot to give you the dad joke before we left, and so I will tell you one today. I don't want to forget. So over the years, I've been trying to come up with a really good dad joke for the chronically unemployed people. Unfortunately, none of them have ever worked. There you go, folks. Y'all have yourselves a wonderful afternoon.